My name is Enid Goble Pritchard. I was born on a farm northwest of Chandler, Oklahoma, October 6, 1906. My parents, William Perry Goble and Martha Ann Matthews Goble, were born in Indiana. Their parents migrated to Kansas when they were young. My father was in the run of the second opening of Oklahoma in 1891. It was the unassigned lands of the Iowa Sac and Fox and Potawatomi and Shawnee tribes. He was a farmer. By working hard and saving, by 1910, a large two-story, five-bedroom house was built for their growing family. 9 of the 11 children had been born. The house was made modern in 1926. Various crops were raised, such as cotton, corn, grain sorghum, and alfalfa. There were some fruit trees and berries. They always had a large garden. There were some pecan trees on the bottom land. By the 30s, 140 acres were farmed. Cows, hogs, and chickens were raised for family use. In this time, in central Oklahoma, horse-drawn machinery was still used. Usually, we got up at 6 a.m. The men folk did the outdoor chores, such as milking and feeding of the animals, while breakfast was being prepared. We all ate at the same time. There was always work to be done by each one. The girls helped chop and pick cotton in season. Some of us learned to milk if needed, but we did not operate machinery. There was always plenty of indoor work to be done with washing, ironing, cooking, cleaning, sewing, gathering food from the garden, and drying or canning. There was a cellar for storage of food. Hogs were butchered and the meat sugar-cured for use. When the Dust Bowl days and the Depression years came in the 30s, we were more fortunate than many. Our parents reminded us that if they had not saved, we would have lost all, as so many did. Most of the ones who left Oklahoma for California were farmers who rented farms and depended upon cotton for a cash crop. Those who stayed had to get government assistance, as the WPA. There had been very little rain for several years. Too much of the land in western Oklahoma had been plowed up, so with no rain, or very little, we had terrible dust storms. We could see the dust clouds rolling in from the west. The dust that came in from around the windows was so fine it could hardly be swept up. Some put damp sheets up around their windows. We did not, as we had too many windows. Feed sacks came in prints as well as plain. Children's dresses were made from them. I made my husband's boxer shorts, pillow slips, and tea towels from what I had. For fun in our community, when I was younger, we had weekend parties. No invitations were sent out. All who wanted to come could. We played singing, swinging games, such as Skip to Maloo, This Old Maid, Miller Boy, and others. Each family would bring cake or pickles for refreshments. Sometimes we had homemade ice cream socials. We had swimming parties. Sometimes we girls went with the boys on possum hunts, but usually caught no possums. Each year, there was a pie or box supper in the community to raise money for Christmas treat sacks for each person. The sacks were made of red and green mesh and were filled with hard candy, nuts, an apple, and an orange. The school children put on the program. My first paying job was teaching the first four grades in my home district. In 1932, I had saved money and was attending Oklahoma A&M College. I had invested $600 in a company that went broke, so I lost the money. I had to borrow $300 from my oldest brother to finish the term. In September of 1932, I married Guy M. Pritchard. He had worked himself through school in my brother's Piggy Wiggly grocery store, but he had no job. His B.S. was in arts and science. I took the first school I could get. It was a one-room, rural, all-eight grades for $60 a month. Guy went to a CC camp in Colorado for several months. I stayed with my parents. My father, Papa, let me drive his Model T Ford 4 miles to my school for $15 a month, and he furnished the gas. I paid no board and room. Lucky me. My youngest sister had her elementary teaching certificate and was hired by the local school district to teach for $45 a month. By staying at home, she could do this. She walked 3/4 of a mile to school. She and I paid a neighbor girl friend who needed work to come live at our house and help my mother, Mama, with the housework. Her parents were in bad financial shape. That $3 bought her clothes. You could buy a nice cotton dress for around $2 or $3. You could also buy a good pair of shoes. I had to save all I could to pay back the $300 I had borrowed from my brother. Any time I had $20 or $30 to spare, I would send it to him. He did not charge me any interest. It took over 2 years to get it paid. When my husband came home from the CC camp, he re-entered A&M to take enough hours to get his B.S. in education. The school board where I was teaching hired him in my place for $70 a month. Now it was time for us to set up housekeeping with about 60-some dollars. We rented a little three-room house about a half mile from the schoolhouse for $10 a month. The house was sheetrocked inside, but did need new paint and paper. The landlord bought me a quart of white paint for 90 cents to paint the woodwork and some pretty apple green wallpaper with a little white flower on it to paper the bedroom for 25 cents a roll. The kitchen floor had a linoleum on it. I bought varnish for the other two-room floors. The kitchen had no built-in cabinets. I painted 5 apple boxes white, stacked them up, and put a white curtain in front for my kitchen cabinet. For cooking, we bought a 2-burner oil stove with a little 1-burner removable oven. It was set on top of a 3-by-3-foot furniture crate. The inside of the crate, where the few pots and pans were kept, a curtain was put in front. A little unfinished drop-leaf table and 4 chairs cost $12. I varnished them. For the bedroom, I had bought a good used Simmons bedstead for $10. For a dresser, I stood 2 orange crates on end and placed a 3-foot, 1-by-12 piece of lumber across the top. I placed a dresser tarp over that. A curtain was put in front. An 18-inch circular mirror was hung on the wall above. I covered a nail keg with some green paisley material that I had made a bedspread from for a seat. For the windows, I bought white ruffled curtains. Now the room was finished, and it looked real pretty. after having grown up in a big house, this little three-room house was like a playhouse. We eventually bought a cow, a pig, and some chickens. Later, we bought a two-acre place with a nice little house and a peach orchard for $500. We lived in this community for 6 years. I promised myself during those years that I would never complain as long as I had plenty to eat, plenty to wear, and a nice warm bed to sleep in. We had been so much more fortunate than others. We did have a job. As for political views, I felt like President FDR saved the country. One big lesson learned was to save, if possible, for the future, and at the same time, be generous in helping those in need. Now it was time in 1942 to move on. Times did get better. After 8 years of not teaching, I started back. We moved to Stillwater in 1951. Out of my 31 years of teaching, the last 17 were at Will Rogers second grade here in Stillwater. Guy was hired in 1951 at OSU as assistant audiovisual director and retired in 1972 as director. I had retired in 1968. At this time, I am living in a nice retirement home called Christian Villa. There's a time or two I kind of...
You made it through just fine.
But all in all, I went through straight.
I was wondering, did you have any questions at all? Did you make some notes?
I just wanted to say, I think it's really clever to use the apple crates in the kitchen. What a good idea.
You know, it was real cute. You just can't believe. See, well, in the kitchen, the apple crates, you know, apple boxes, you don't get apple. Stores don't get things now like they used to. You know, everything comes in cardboard. But we used to get real nice apple boxes. And, you know, I kept those apple boxes. I still had two or three of them over in my garage down here, six blocks south, before I moved up here. I just couldn't give those apple boxes away. And I used them for storage out in the garage. But you know, then the orange crates were divided. They were bigger than apple boxes were just about this long and about this tall. Orange crates were about this tall and had a division between them. So when I set those on end for my dresser, you see, I had those two little shelves in there. And with that piece of lumber, that 1x12, across the top and then a dresser scar. People don't use dresser scars anymore. But everybody had dresser scarves in those days. You put a dresser scarf on top. And then with that 18-inch mirror above, and then I got a nail keg and covered it with the same paisley material that I had sewn made a bedspread with. And then those little white ruffle curtains that you see still today, those little white ruffle curtains, it really made a pretty thing. And the bedroom had varnished floor, and I suppose they used a throw rug. But really, it was kind of cute. But like I said, for me, I had grown up in that great big old house, and that was just kind of like playing house for me. But
you had to be creative. You had to kind of know how to make things
happen. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. But we didn't have any money. People in those days, they didn't have so much built-in cabinets. Everybody bought stand-up cabinets, you know. Well, we didn't have enough money to buy cabinets, so that's just the way I made my cabinet. And, of course, we didn't have a lot in the way of cooking utensils and that. The furniture comes now in cardboard crates, too, and it used to come in wooden crates. And that wooden crate, about a 3-foot square wood crate, it stood up about 3 feet high. Well, my little oven set on top of that, and then down underneath, that made my kitchen cabinets for the, I suppose we had a few
I probably had one skillet and a pot or a pan or two. In the 1930s, though, I do remember we bought, they were selling this wherever aluminum. You've heard of wherever aluminum. And there was a salesman going around the country selling aluminum. And I bought a, we got for $36. Now it'd cost $150 or $200 if you bought anything like that. They had two big pans about this big around. And then a two-quart cooking pan and a one-quart cooking pan. And then I bought a sieve that you know, like you, with a burner, a ricer. You know what a ricer is? Funnel-shaped thing and a little hole, and you put fruits in like plums or something and get your pulp out to make your jelly and stuff. And we got all that for $36. I'll show you. I still have one little piece I couldn't give away. Long time ago, they got to saying that aluminum wasn't good to cook in.
Right.
And they came out with other parts, you know, the steel and stuff. But that ricer, it stayed good. I couldn't give it away. But when I came over here, I gave it, all my things, good things I had, I gave to my nieces and great-nieces and all my furniture and everything like that. And my niece here in Stillwater did take the ricer, because sometimes people still like to run potatoes or something through it, you know.
My mom still uses that to make her jelly with.
She has a big
wooden thing.
That's what I had. It was a ricer, but it was in that wherever aluminum. And I'll show you. I kept one piece as a souvenir, my little quart aluminum pan.
Magnifying glass there.
Oh, you know, getting to where I can't see fine writing without a magnifying glass. I want to show you that little.
That sure was some fine writing.
I'll show you that little pan. And you know what? After I moved over here, I brought my little toaster oven and a waffle iron, and they have a microwave here, but I had no way to cook anything on top if I wanted to. So just a few months ago, I decided I just didn't like a scrambled egg in a microwave. I don't know whether you do or not.
Not really.
But so, and I've given away all my little skillets and everything. So I went down to Ace Hardware and bought a little one burner electric hot plate and a little iron skillet so I could make me good scrambled egg. And then now I can use that little pan I saved if I want to cook something on top of the stove. And I'll show it to you. Because it was bought in 1936. And it's still good.
Just the right size, huh?
Just the right size. Then my little electric burner is in that pan. But you know, I don't think there's anything to it that aluminum was bad for you to cook in. I've used that since 1936.
Wow. It's still in great shape.
It's still in good shape.
That was a good deal.
Yeah.
How'd that pan cost you, probably?
The whole set cost $36.
Right.
I think we paid it out by the month. But I just couldn't give that away. I gave all the rest of it away, and I thought, well, if I ever do need it. And since then, I decided to buy that little one. Burner, a hot plate burner. I don't often use it, but every now and then, if I want a good scrambled egg, that's what I use. And it's so much, much better than one made in microwave. Microwaves are wonderful and for warming up, and I couldn't do without them now. At first, when microwaves came out, I thought, oh, I don't need a microwave. I have plenty of time to bake potatoes and things like that, you know. It takes around an hour to bake potato in a regular oven. And I thought, oh, I'm home all the time. I don't need this. But I about decided that I was going to buy one anyway when my brother died, and his wife had already died. And his children all had a microwave, and so they gave me his, but I was in the mood then already, and I Now we don't know how we could get along without a microwave.
That's for sure.
I had a question about some of the games you used to play.
Yeah.
I never heard of Miller Boy before. I've heard of Skip to My Lou and other ones, but what was the
Miller Boy? Skip to My Lou, Skip to My Lou.
We've heard of that one.
Let's see, how's the Miller Boy go?
You ever heard that?
Once the Miller Boy lived by the mill, the mill turned around with a... Well, I've almost forgotten it now, it's been so long ago. And anyway, you change partners and everything. It's kind of like Skip to Blue. You go right and left and around.
Yeah.
They're a little bit similar to square dancing, and yet not the same.
Does it go like a...
Once when the mill boy lived by the mill, the mill turned around with a really good wheel, hand and hopping, laid in the sack. Ladies step forward and gents fall back.
I know that song. We call
it. Then we went right and left.
That's right. They go, we had an old man at the mill. Same old man sitting at the mill. Mill turned around of its own free will. One hand on the hopper, the other on the sack. Ladies step forward and the gents fall back.
Well, we didn't know that verse.
Yeah.
But it's the same tune and you'd play it the same way. And see, ladies step forward and gents fall back.
I never knew that was a dance song. I sing that song all the time. That's a good song.
Did they dance with it?
I never knew that.
Well, you were in a circle, and you sang it, and then when it set, your boy and the girl was together. I forget whether the girls were on the inside or the boys on the inside. But anyway,
it had to be men on the inside.
Inside, okay.
Because the ladies step forward, and the gents fall
back. And they fall back. All right. I'd step forward and... And we'd have a different partner then.
Right.
And then you go around, right and left around, and then maybe you sing another verse.
You know any other verses?
Huh?
You know any other verses?
No, just the one I sang, and I've never heard the one you sang.
I've got a ton of them. I know a lot of verses to that song.
You do?
Yeah. My old man's in Kalamazoo, you don't know where, oh yes I do. First to the left and then to the right, this old mill grinds day and night.
How'd you happen to know? You grew up in the country, I bet.
Well, some people think so.
Huh?
A little bit, yeah. I like old songs.
Oh, you just like old songs.
Yeah.
Well, how'd you happen to get hold of that Miller Boy song?
Well, we call it Old Man at the Mill.
Old Man? Do you have a book with those songs in?
I have an old recording of an old group doing it. I guess they were from Tennessee doing it. And I just learned it off that tape that I have.
Well, we didn't have a lot of verses to it. So whoever taught us to it just taught us that one thing.
It seemed to fit okay for you guys.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's neat. I'm glad to hear about that.
Uh-huh. But we played it. We got out in the circle. You see, we did all these things. And you'd go right and left around and different ones. And
now I've got an interesting question for you. What was the business that failed? You invested $600.
Oh, it was some kind of an ice company here in Stillwater. I forget what they called it. But my brother had a Piggly Wiggly store here, and he thought it was a good company. And see, I was going to get some interest on that money.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went broke. It was some kind of an ice company right here in Stillwater. But I don't know what it was called.
Your brother owned the Piggly Wiggly?
Yeah. Now, Piggly Wiggly stores, you bought the franchise.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so you owned the store. You bought the franchise.
And that was in the early 30s, or was that in the...
20s? He moved here in 1925. He bought the Piggly Wiggly store. And it was downtown, right in that block where Pure Imports are.
Oh, yeah, Pure One Imports.
Pure Imports. And he stayed there. He's in the grocery business. He sold out, I think, around 1940 to another man, and then they moved. Grocery stores were moving out from downtown, and he moved the store up to where that Good as New clothes store is on North Main. And then eventually he sold it to Louis Geiser, and then it moved up to where the old IGA was on North Main, And then it went completely out of business, and later IGA went in there. But see, all in the 20s and early 30s, all the grocery stores were downtown. And then it just things just, and in all towns, that's the way it was. Now you don't find the grocery stores in any town of any size downtown. The grocery stores are out. But in those days, the 20s and 30s and early before that, the grocery stores were downtown. And
I remember that store on the corner of 6th and Washington, that IGA there.
It's still there.
It used to be a Piggly Wiggly.
Did
Cross
it?
Cross my heart. When I first came to school
6th
here,
and Washington, it was a Piggly Wiggly?
Yes, it was.
Well, I never did know that.
When I first moved here, people would call it, let's go to the Piggly Wiggly. And they'd go down there, and then, of course, they weren't used to changing.
6th and Washington.
Yeah, you know where that IGA is?
Yeah.
That's what all the locals told me. They'd always say, let's go to the Piggly Wiggly and head over to that store.
And when I'd
say, why was it called that? They'd say, used to be.
Who are some of your old people that told you that? I never knew that a Piggly Wiggly was there.
Some of the faculty members.
My brother's Piggly Wiggly store that was downtown, and then Louis Geisler moved it up. Of course, there was a period of time that I wasn't in Stillwater much. But I never knew Piggly Wiggly store was.
Well, they could have been pulling my leg, but it was a couple of the old.
There were several other grocery stores in there, but I don't believe a Piggly Wiggly.
Humpty Dumpty.
Humpty Dumpty might have been there.
I might have been confusing.
I think maybe you're confused.
It's easy.
It could have been Humpty Dumpty. Could
have
easily been, but Piggly Wiggly moved from when Louis Geisler bought it. He moved up to where that Good as New is, and then on up to where IGA on North.
I bet it was Humpty Dumpty.
I think that's more likely. Because there never was but one Piggly Wiggly store and still are.
It's weird how they started nursery
and
rhymes.
There, that used, where that place is used to be Eugene's, Fields Elementary School.
On that corner there?
Absolutely. We had three schools in Stillwater. They were Jefferson, where the Board of Education building is on North Main now, and Eugene Fields, where the IGA store is now. And then they had a school where they keep the buses and everything in the south part of town. There were three schools here. And then in 1951... that's when we moved here. They had built three new schools, Westwood, Highland Park, and Will Rogers. And they were opened for schools in February of 51. And we went from that rural school to a consolidated school near Cushing and stayed there until he went into service, and then a year or two after he came back. Then we moved to Kansas, thinking maybe we'd stay there. And those schools opened in 51, February of 51, Highland Park, Westwood, and Will Rogers. And I started teaching there and stayed there for 17 years until 68.
So you taught near Chandler?
I taught 9 years in Lincoln County. See, I couldn't put all that in.
Right.
I had been teaching, you see, several years before I had come up here in 32 to go to school. I taught my first years in my home district, as I said, but I didn't put the year. It was 1925 and 26, 26 and 27. I taught my home school. And then I'd teach 2 or 3 years, and then I'd come to school. And that at 32 was a year that I had been teaching at a school for 3 years and had saved my money, and I had come up to go to school, and then that's when I lost my money, and the depression had hit, you know, so bad.
So did you always want to be a teacher?
Huh?
Did you always want to be a school teacher?
No, not necessarily. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I went to high school and I started teaching primarily because my home district offered me a school.
And so I had to take a county examination. I started teaching without going to college. You, in those days, in early 20s, you could take a what they called a county examination, and you could get a one-year teaching certificate. Then if you wanted to renew it, or if you didn't want to have to take that examination each year, you had to go to school, take some hours to renew it. So I taught my first school in my home district, as my sister later did. And then I didn't want to take the county examination again, so I came up here and went to school. It used to be, we used to have the quarter system instead of there. And I could come up here. The school I taught was, we'd have a summer term, July and August, and then school was let out for cotton picking until November. Well, there was a quarter in there that I could come up and go to school. So I came up and went to school to renew my certificate and instead of taking the examination. So then that way I just started teaching and saving money and coming to school. And I had, you could get an elementary teaching certificate with 2 years' work. And that's what I had. That's what I had when I taught my whole 9 years in Lincoln County, was a two-year elementary teaching certificate. Then after World War II, when I went back to teaching, we would come to summer schools. A guy was working, we were at Consolidated School over at Cushing, Hillside, north of Cushing, and he was working in the Audiovisual Center, so I came over too and took courses, you know, and went to school. And then kept teaching. I finally got my B.S. in 39. And since we were living here then, old guy said, well, you just well go ahead and get your master's since you live here. So I'd go to summer school and got my master's in 54. So I've been in school practically all my life, I felt like. And a lot of the teachers could teach and take night classes or Saturday classes and work towards their degrees. I didn't have enough vitality to do that. I spent all of my vitality teaching during the day, and I was too tired at night to want to go to school. Or on Saturdays, I spent my Saturdays cleaning house and doing things like that. I tried taking Saturday classes once, and it just didn't work for me. So I would just go to school in the summertime. And I just couldn't do two things at once. I couldn't teach school and go to school. It's too much for me.
It's better to concentrate on one thing.
Well, I guess that's it. I just had to do one thing at a time. I just couldn't. It just didn't work for me. I couldn't go to school and teach school at the same time.
I thought it was interesting that you were paid $60 a month, and when your husband took over the same position, he was $70 a month.
Yes. Well, salaries were coming up a little, and then I guess they thought a man was worth more than a woman. No, you know, men always got a little more than women.
Right.
Did at school.
That was quite a bit more, though. That was quite a bit more.
$10, yeah. But I think things had begun coming up a little. I taught at that school 3 years before he started teaching it, and but teaching all 8 grades is a hard job.
I bet.
The first year that I took that, the first school after during the Depression, and I took that, I had just taught before. I'd taught just the first 4 grades, and I had not had any arithmetic or grammar or anything like that since I'd left grade school. You know, they don't teach grammar in high school. You take English, but it's more composition. You don't take grammar, which right. I think is a bad mistake. You ought to take, I think more grammar ought to be taught because it's so hard for most people, and really grammar was hard for me. Maybe because I hadn't had very good teachers. But when I took that school, And I knew I had to teach 7th and 8th grade grammar and 7th and 8th grade arithmetic. And I had had none of it since I was in the 8th grade myself. You know, I had to study. So I got some books. And I had a sister-in-law who was an excellent English teacher, best I've ever known. And I got some books, and I came up here, and she lived in Stillwater. I stayed 2 weeks, and I'd go off in the bedroom and start through that 7th and 8th grade English book, grammar book. If I'd come to something I didn't understand, why, she'd come in and explain it to me. And as for the arithmetic book, I guess I was a little better in arithmetic than I was in grammar, and I got that myself. But I found out I had to go back and review a percentage in the 6th grade. And it was only then that I realized that percentage and fractions was the same.
So you were learning as you were teaching.
You learn more teaching than you ever do learn going to school. And I went through that arithmetic, and I never went to school a morning when I was teaching that I wasn't sure that I could work every problem that would come up. Because I would, if I'd been teaching, if I'd come to a problem I couldn't work, I would have just been a nervous wreck. And lots of teachers tried that, and they couldn't teach it. But I knew if I taught arithmetic that I had to know it, and same way with grammar. I felt like I could read the English and read history and geography and sort of keep up with that. But there was an awful lot of reading to do when you're teaching all 8 grades and have all those books.
I can imagine.
And then you have to combine. You can't have history every day. You can't have English every day. You have to rotate maybe some things. Some subjects you'd have twice a week, and some 3 times a week. You just couldn't have all of them every day. You just couldn't possibly get it in. And the way I did arithmetic, we used the blackboard, and teachers don't use the blackboard much anymore. But I did. The kids like to use the blackboard. I'd put the first graders up the blackboard and give them little things to do. And then when I'd maybe call the second graders up, and when it was too much for the first graders, they'd sit down, and then the third graders would come, and we'd go. And I nearly always, every day, had each class up at the board working some. Because in a one-room school, they do learn from each other. I had 6th graders sometimes that were as good as 7th and 8th graders.
And, how many students did you have?
Well, the first year I taught the school was awful much. All the whole year long, I had 58 on roll, which is an awful lot. I changed schools and had about 30-some, usually.
That's still quite a few.
But you wouldn't have so many in a grade. Maybe you'd only have 3 or 4 in each grade, but still you had all 8 grades.
The student-to-teacher ratio wasn't much better then.
No.
If you had 58 on the roll.
Yeah. And that was my first year was my hardest year that I ever had, because it was the first year of all 8 grades. It was the hardest year I'd ever had in my life, because it was the biggest school I'd had. And I had more studying to do. And that year then, when I changed this other school, I knew it wasn't such a big school, but that very year was when that school that had so many, a lot of them pulled out and went to California, and it turned out that they didn't have more than half as much the next year as I'd had.
Now, a lot of people consider 1935 to be the height of the dust storm.
Yes.
And you were here at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You'd be 29.
Yeah, 35. I was teaching. I believe I was teaching my last year there at that school before Guy took over in 36.
So that was still been in Lincoln County.
But I was in Lincoln County, and I was living at home, And Eunice and I both were living at home. I had to drive from that school just about a mile, that's about a mile and a quarter, and she walked 3/4 of a mile to school. But you know that girl, our neighborhood girl, she was in, really grew up in the same class with Eunice, but she hadn't been able to go to high school. Her folks couldn't send her. And so she was a good, intelligent girl, and her people, they owned their farm, but it was an upland farm, and they had an awful struggle getting through those years and didn't have any money to buy clothes or anything. And that her coming down to live at our house, she got her food, her folks didn't have to feed her, and with that $3 a week, that went quite a ways in buying her clothes and shoes and things that she needed. But you just can't imagine, it's just, well, even things have just changed so fast. I retired here in 68, and my salary, and we thought we were doing pretty good, but my salary, I kept my last,
pay stub,
for showing what your salary is for the year, just to keep, or I wouldn't have believed it. I was teaching for $7,000 a year in 68, and things have just changed so fast. Inflation.
Yeah.
That I just couldn't believe.
That does seem like a small amount.
Yeah, but that was in 68. But you know, since that time, inflation has just come up so fast that you just can't believe it.
Yeah.
Of course, Guy was teaching too. But
do you have any idea what your combined
and we had
income
built,
was?
We had, when he came out of the service, he was eligible for a GI loan for a little house. And first we built a little house down here on Bennett Drive, which is still there, a little two-bedroom house for $9,000. And then in 1964, and that was before I retired in 68, we built a brick three-bedroom house there right across from Will Rogers School. And we caught, at that time, in 64, we paid around $35,000 for that big house. That's how inflation has come. I sold it for $120,000.
Is it on the corner?
It's not on the corner. It's the one second from the corner.
All right.
Right on Bennett, on Graham Avenue.
Right.
I didn't want the corner lot. I wanted, but our house was built before theirs was.
Yeah.
Just about the same time.
Hmm.
But that cost between around $36,000, and then I sold it. It was $120,000. Can you imagine? See, now that was just how things, how inflation. So you can see where my $7,000 was pretty good considering to what we bought the house and what we sold it for.
Right. It might, yeah. I was trying to, do you know what your husband's income was at that time? What was your
Well, his was
income?
More than mine, considerably. No, I know his was probably about $9,000 or $10,000, I imagine, with the university.
And that was considered middle, lower middle class or middle class or?
Well, I would say that was good middle class of what teachers were. Now, he didn't have a doctorate degree. He just had his master's degree.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But when I look back at it and see how things are today, it's just gradually come up so fast that you can't believe that it was like it was. And I just can't see any young people going to housekeeping like I did. My nieces, I have great nieces. One of them's already just built a nice, big, new house. That one up there.
That white one?
House, you see a picture of the house up there.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Right in the middle there.
And, and she married a young man. They went to high school together. And she married a young man that was going to dental school. And she continued working until he got through school. And, you know, I know that just the last, they rented a house at first and then bought one and then decided on this one. And by now they have two little boys and he's doing well in dental practice. And they've built that nice big house, which I'm sure they plan it to be a permanent home to raise their children in, at Piedmont, which is right out of Oklahoma City somewhere, I don't know. And now I have another great niece that's a court reporter, and she's been married for several years, and they've been saving money for a house, but they want to live out in the country. So they're building a nice big house now out in my home community, because her dad, my nephew, operates a dairy there on our original home property. He went into the service, and when he came back, he said he wanted to raise his family in the country, but he didn't want to do like his dad or my dad had done, just raise crops. He wanted to cash daily. So he put in a dairy, and he still operates a dairy. And his two daughters now, the one that's now his other daughter, she married a man that's in construction work, and they're building a house right there in that same community. It isn't on our land. There wasn't any spot that our dad still had that they wound up, but it's just about a mile from it. And I guess their house is going up real fast now. But him being in construction work, he's doing a lot of the work himself. So their house is not going to cost them as much as it would have if he couldn't do the work.
Right.
They're getting ready to put the roof on it just this week. But I hope to see it, but I want to wait until it's completely finished. But,
did that cover all of your...
Life is different.
Yeah.